Is he done now? Or is he done now? Neither work. Now it is on?
Very well.
How close do I have to be this close? Or should I yell? I'm just waiting for Dr. Jacobson to settle down. So I am Ellie Miranda, and as the library says, Miss, Mrs. or Mr. They said that to me on the phone once. And of course, because my voice is not the most soprano in the world, they said that on the phone, and I said, write doctor and keep guessing. I'm just telling these things so that you'll get used to my accent, so now I hope you are. The topic has something to do with sex division, women in Melanesia. There is a group of people who are engaged in a symposium about women in Oceania at this moment. We are engaged in a correspondence and exchange of papers, and indeed thinking for this presentation has helped me think and look more seriously through the papers that I have already received. And instead of male and female in Melanesia, we are now calling it gender classification in Melanesia. And I will quote from somebody that Kate Millett quotes about the terminology sex versus gender. The word sexual will have connotations of anatomy and physiology. This obviously leaves tremendous areas of behavior, feelings, thoughts, and fantasies that are related to the sexes and yet do not have primary biological connotations. It is for some of these psychological phenomena that the term gender will be used. One can speak of the male sex or the female sex, but one can also talk about masculinity and femininity and not necessarily be implying anything about anatomy or physiology. Thus, while sex and gender seem to common sense inextricably bound together, the two realms are not inevitably bound in anything like a one-to-one relationship, but each may go into quite independent ways. Now, this is from Robert Stoller, Sex and Gender, New York Science House, 1968. And actually, he's helpful only in sort of showing that the normal connotation of the word sex is biological. I would like to substitute social or social and cultural for his use of the concept of gender. And while I'm here in the quoting stage, I would like to quote Millett herself. Whatever the real differences between the sexes may be, we are not likely to know them until the sexes are treated alike. So this is the sort of the basis, not so much of our symposium as it has helped me to a little bit to clarify what might be meant with gender. So there is acknowledged in Melanesian cultures the biological distinction between men and women. But once you start looking how men and women behave and how they are viewed and what they do in the cultures, then you will see a great amount of detail that actually conflicts within the cultures and conflicts with our perceptions. So that acting like a woman or acting like a man are really become conventions of a culture. You'll find in these pictures, and you'll find in all Melanesian cultures, such things as your most important class of people who babysit may not be women at all. They may be young, unmarried men. And these persons will babysit not only for their younger siblings, but they will babysit whatever babies happen to be around. You'll also find men cooking very, very frequently. You'll find women cutting firewood, women navigating, and so on. Most, I think, of the activities of sort of housekeeping and getting by in everyday world will not be, at least not sex-linked in the ways that we tend to or have tended to sex-link things. But it is only men who wage war, and it seems to be only men who are officiants in cults. Melanesia is also, of course, very famous for men's so-called secret societies, which I would like to rename as men's sacred societies, because they really do have to do with the conceptions of mana and the sources of mana which are seen in the ancestors. Common also to Melanesia is the problem of the real biology of women. That is that women cannot escape menstruating, and that menstruation is universally in Melanesia seen as a dangerous activity or fate. The blood of menstruation and the blood of childbirth are seen as dangerous and polluting. And almost universally in Melanesia, women are, for the period of this shedding of blood, isolated, secluded, and I'd like to say they are ignored. But this does not necessarily mean that they are, because they menstruate, ruled out of the rest of the important activities. So in our symposium so far, for example, Jane Goodale, Bryn Mawr, has presented a paper on Kowloon gender, which shows the following kind of division. In childhood, sexes are treated quite equally and identically. At the onset of menstruation, women are seen as falling under periodic dangerous illness, which pollutes their husbands, their gardens, and the pigs. But outside the polluting periods, women are not dangerous, nor are they seen as inferior. They are involved in work and business as much as men are. And Goodale says, it is not women that are inferior or marginal. It is married persons, both men and women, who become marginal as versus other people. And married persons because sex for the Kowloon is linked with nature and work is linked with culture. And culture is seen as something that is really worth trying. Culture and work are superior to nature, and sex, which is linked to animal nature, is seen as a problem area. So, Goodale, in fact, then finds that with the exception of the dangerous times, the polluting times, when women are literally put aside and isolated for for the rest of Kowloon life, relative equality of sexes prevails. Women can build a career of just an equal importance as so-called big men. Marilyn Strathern, who works at the University of Papua New Guinea, has contributed a paper on Hagen gender. She groups again, finding the same sort of biological definition of women, in that they menstruate, they give birth, at both times they shed blood. Otherwise, she finds women not opposed to men as such, but women and so-called rubbish men opposed to big men. That is, women do become the inferior half of the society, but not women alone. In that New Guinea Highlands area, prestigious women can be found, but their prestige is reflected glory. Women are also, by the Strathern definition and by their research, found to be the important links between groups of people. This is also true of the Lao. And they are seen as producers when men are seen as transactors. So you have again a different definition of being a man and being a woman. Now, for a short while, about the biological facts that so influence Melanesian perception of women, or at least their classification of women at times. You must remember that the technology is primitive, and that biological facts are laid quite bare in Melanesian cultures. Menstruation and the blood of childbirth can in no way be concealed. People cannot walk about and pretend they are not menstruating. So that is taken into account, and yet many kinds of answers or reactions to that are found. Ian Hobin has written a book called The Island of the Menstruating Men, which purports to show that, in fact, men inflict wounds on themselves to imitate the women menstruating. They, of course, explain it somewhat differently, but that is what he sees there. Now, the acknowledging of biological differences still leaves a great open area, and that is exactly what we mean with the gender classification. I will not report that that I would have sort of ready answers to what the detail of Lao ethnography means. We are going to look at some of it and look at it from women's point of view. The Lao are a society with very clear distinction between male and female, so much so that the village plan reflects that. All space, all social space is in fact divided into male, neutral, and female, and the male is also thought at the same time to be conceptually high. It is connected with fire. It is thought to be the four, as opposed to women being, women's area being low, being connected with bed rather than fire, and that is especially what shows in the house, and thought to be behind or aft, just as this shows in the canoe. The men's area contains the ancestral relics and is thought and altars and is thought to be the source of mana, power, and the women's area because of the birth huts and seclusion huts is thought to be polluted and polluting, and men will not go there. So this kind of arrangement prevails in space. Space is thus divided. And yet, a certain sphere of importance is also allotted to women, even that they are seen as inferior and coming after. And that is that women are quite influential in what is economic and secular, whereas men are very influential and important in clan affairs, that is, linking up with ancestors. So the men that now live are, and especially the priests, are the link that the whole clan has with the ancestors, and worshipping the ancestors and the whole cult is a very important occupation for the men, especially the priests. Women are seen as links with other clans, and in fact two men in different clans cannot become friends, that is, allies, without their children being married to each other. So the marriage of a woman, and the marriage always exhibits the woman, and the bride is shown and treated, the bridegroom is invisible for the whole ceremony of wedding. The marriage of women is therefore a very important secular and political affair. Now, one can of course say that the women don't have all that much to say about the marriage. The marriages are arranged, but neither do the men have very much to say. They are arranged for men too. Both men and women, both the bride and the bridegroom, however, have a veto right. In fact, a Lao woman at all stages of her life will have a veto right. So, if we are looking at the native model of these people, my people, of the Lao, of their own society, we can see a sort of a very careful balance worked out. And the way they would view it is women produce children. Children are very important because they become adults, and adults collect food, and they cultivate food, and they care for young and old. Therefore, women are very productive, and they are sort of inevitably productive. And they seem to say men should produce something too. And in fact, one way of looking at Lao religion is to see it as reflection of sort of the production that happens in nature. For example, women at childbirth remain in seclusion for an extended period, 1 month, and when a priest dies, his son remains in the men's area in seclusion, thus giving birth to gods. So there is a sort of a native model that puts everything together and tries to explain why things happen as they happen. It is not primarily a biological model even there. And of course the whole thing could be looked at very differently, as for example the management and allocation of scarce resources. I know that that could explain many things, and there is a very good example that it could explain very well. Where the Melanesians live, except New Guinea, and even in New Guinea, there is very little meat to be had. There are no large mammals, and the only land mammals that are cultivated are the pigs. But the cultivation of pigs, the breeding of pigs and growing of pigs, is actually a rather sort of heavy kind of occupation. You can do it, but it requires much feed. It's a lot of work. So therefore, you will never have as much pork as people would eat if they had unlimited access. Now, it so happens that pork is ritually forbidden for women. It's also periodically ritually forbidden for men. Pork has become a food that is under this sort of ritual regulation. You could say that then, therefore, that at times everybody has to abstain from pork, which is a highly desirable food for the people, but that the simplest thing of really cutting the consumption is to put women in their place and forbid pork for them altogether. Now, that is one way, and it is a way that has been done in Melanesia in many, many cultures. One can also say that fish is permitted to all. It's equally good. Lao have done something that is interesting. They have tabooed shellfish for men, and that is only available for women. I am not going to ponder about final courses and how these things work. I do want to point out that, of course, Lao society, as we met them, was in a relatively traditional and relatively stable order. There is a lot of change, and there is a lot of pressure for change from the outside. And it is interesting to look at the fate of women in times of stress and change. You know, the pressure for change comes from all manner of religious groups who want to convert people. It comes some from the colonial government that wants to educate people. And it comes some from all kinds of businesses that want to now ask people all to gather shells and now want them to sell copra and so forth. It is my impression, and I could back it out, that much change and experimenting is permitted to allow women exactly because they are not seen as the guardians of the ancestral cult and the guardians of established order. So that, for example, it doesn't really matter, women are free to convert into Christian sects or churches, provided that they still follow the taboo system, and this kind of conversion happens. It has also happened that Christian churches are all defined, Christian islands are all defined as polluted because they have given up the regulation about menstrual blood and child birth. But it would seem then that, you know, in some sense, by the exclusion from the cult, Lao women are in fact in a marginal position, in an inferior position, but that this enables them to even advance change. I have also observed that linguistic change does happen through women and those men that don't matter, that is the young unmarried men. So from the point of view of the traditional culture, women are certainly in a marginal position, but then they are also allowed to experiment. The stability of the culture is very much dependent on the continuity of the ancestral cult, which is of course very much threatened already at this time. All the priests that are now there have a successor, but there is no way of telling if their successors will have a successor. So How much of this is instructive for you, I cannot tell. We have here a relatively simple, even if it is rich, and relatively stable culture. And many of the questions that you have asked, probably in this course, have not yet been asked by the Lao. It is not that the women are not aware of the limitations of their life, but no Lao has very much, very many options. So with this all in mind, I'll now show some pictures of the Lao, and we'll see what kind of questions you ask, want to ask. You can ask questions while the pictures are being shown, for, as far as I can. I don't care. I can stand.
Okay. Well, if you want to lower it,
this is a picture. The people that I am dealing with are called Lau, L-A-U, and they live in the Solomons, which is, you know, not marginal in Melanesia. They live on islands that they themselves have built. This one here is the oldest artificial man-made island. It's partially built on a natural rock. All these islands have this threefold division of space into male and female, which are conceptually as far from each other as they can, and then the neutral family area, which is three for all. That's actually an island that is now vacant. It's haunted by displeased ancestors. And this is an island with a Christian suburb on the left, with only one coconut. It is recent. It is not small. There are 40 families on that Christian suburb. There are about, I don't remember how many families. There are about 150 people in that very low thing on the left, and about 200 people living in the ancestral pagan island. The Christian island is not divided into zones, and that's why the pagans regard the Christian islands all thoroughly polluted, including the church. A menstruating woman from a seclusion area is totally free to go to the Christian church, but she may not come to the main area of her own village. The water source, they go to this main island, which is Malaita, which is behind, you know, the mountainous, big island behind, and there are quite a number of rivers. They go to those rivers. Actually, young girls go every afternoon with bamboo tubes to the rivers, and they fill the water bamboos of the priests, and they put them in the front of the canoe, and the family water goes in the middle of the canoe, so they carry it home. This is people engaged in building an island. These people here are all children. They are carrying on a raft coral rocks that have been dived up from the bottom of the lagoon. There is a sequence of pictures of that. Oh, in the wrong order. They should be coming closer, but they and of those, then, the island is built. In this case, an extension to an existing island. You can see also that the walls are made of leaves, sago leaves. This is a brand new island in its glory. No divisions yet, no nothing yet. There will be. I try to put things in an order where you look at a person's advance from childhood to further on. And the children are all very well cared for. There's quite a number. You seldom see a child. You can seldom get a picture of a child alone. This little kid is looking at this big butterfly. That's a more common. Now, I did something very ridiculous. Since this was about women, I took only babysitting pictures where women are babysitting, which is not at all the real picture, because both sexes babysit a great deal. And babysitting is done a great deal, because the children, babies are carried on the hip. That's what babysitting is. Until they are very secure, both in their walking and in not falling off the rocks to the ocean. This is a young child with a toy canoe and with a model of a ship that visited the lagoon. This is sort of rapping, you know. Sitting and chatting and looking after kids. But these are all old ladies. These happen to be all women. That is a family. Children babysit a great deal, young children. They can do whatever they wish except wake the baby. There's only one rule, so that you can very well play in the water, like you can actually see here something like four sibling pairs. You know, they have, rather than on the hip, they have the baby on the back. And they have just gone wading in the lagoon, and some of the, you know, those canoes are there and so on. This is a crowd. The native explanation is that if you are a lot in salt water and the sun shines a lot, then your hair bleaches. They don't bleach their hair. And they have lots of these blonde. And also, it's not the fault of any white man or anything like that. And the blondness is very, you know, you can see that it pairs with very brown, tanned, and otherwise dark skin. So I am inclined to believe that the salt water bleaches the hair. There is also hair that is very Polynesian in character, and I think this is a mixed population anyway. You know, you don't have only kinky hair, you have also wavy and relatively straight hair. But then I don't know that Polynesians have much, even brown, not to speak of blonde hair. The lagoon population has the light hair. The bush population that don't swim in the ocean at all, don't have, and otherwise they are very similar in appearance. So, you know, I'll content myself believing that it is as they say. Am I pushing the wrong button? I don't hear you for the hum.
Sorry. Apparently lunge is used so that they can get really hair light. And this apparently is used.
These people use lime for... Just a moment. These people also use lime for bleaching the hair, but that is ritual, and it doesn't really bleach. You sort of draw stripes, white stripes in your hair, and that doesn't seem to, you know, have any long-term effect. But maybe it's done so rarely. Incidentally, the name of this village is the rock of the lime rock. I'm getting this. I'm sorry. There are two buttons, and I'm now reversing.
How do I get back to?
Oh, my. Sorry. Ah. This is children being children. They are coping with the elements, so to speak. One of the things that was very hard for me was I tried to sort of imitate at least the children, you know, at all times, and went very thoughtlessly swimming in a very heavy rain. And it was very hard on the eyes because of the sprinkle of the salt water back to your eyes. But the kids are mostly, you see, they live in a very limited space, but the lagoon also is space. So they move very much about in the lagoon, both in their little canoes and swimming and wading and so on. Oh, sorry. Many of these dives are at the same time imitations of different sea creatures. This is a group of girls, it so happens, playing wedding. And they have arranged algae? No. Seaweed are supposed to here be a change of shells. They are trying to create the kinds of valuables that the bride has, you know, like shell strings and strings of dolphin teeth. These are sort of monetary kind units, and that's what they say these things are, that they are. So they are trying to create the bride wealth. This is a sibling pair. Just kids playing. There is one very, very blonde family, like their very light-skinned child. These children are actually playing an imitation of a men's dance. That's why they have put leaves on the waist, if there is a waist. And they are sort of decorated for that. The guy with the white hat is my son, dressed for the picture, I'm afraid. This is a Lao girl. They are very free and outgoing, I think is a good word. This is a bush backwards child from Malaita. This is the bride wealth. Strings of shell money, red shell and white shell, which are sort of worked into small discs and then stringed. Oh yes, this is the wedding process called going for the woman. Now a group of young people from this village has gone to the bride's village, and she has said goodbye in a very formal way, and now she's being brought to the husband's village. But the husband is not inside, he is hiding somewhere in the shore, and the bride is actually in the middle of the middlemost canoe. So I have again put, I don't know how to do these things with the carousel, I have put them in a wrong sequence. Yeah, the boy's parents have a conference. The mother is also supposed to have much say in that, because the young woman will come to her village and actually be her immediate helper. So they discuss the possibilities, they talk to their son. He can say yes if he likes the girl. Then the father of the young man and his brothers usually go and propose formally to the girl's parents, who talk to their daughter, who can say no. And if the engagement is then brought about, the initial exchanges are made, then they are considered to be, you know, engaged to be married. At this point, they don't start seeing very much of each other, but they are very aware of who is who. And the girl can actually break the engagement by making remarks about the boy, you know, who would marry Dione, you know. If she does that in public, that is, that amounts to, you know, dissolution of the, dissolving the engagement, and the gifts must be returned. Then they can go ahead and get married as they are doing here. And there are still ways of getting free, you know. The one is not consummating the marriage, which happened. You can actually get by going to this women's seclusion area, for example, without, you know, being with your husband and all. The common life is supposed to start relatively slowly anyways. And so if the woman then curses or refuses to sleep with a man, that also will, you know, people will endure this a while, but then they will sort of negotiate a divorce, or maybe that should be called annulment. And they can get divorced later, but it gets a bit more complicated because they all, you know, as soon as they are children, the woman would have to leave the children in the husband's clan. The bride is here under a rain wrap. She is covered on this trip to the village. And there she's coming up. She's still covered with these branches. And a lot of people have gathered. Everybody has gathered to see her. She's coming here. Many of these pictures are very dark because by the time they have gone and come back, 3 hours paddling in some cases both ways, and some ceremony in the bride's village, so it was often too late in the evening to really get any decent pictures. This is the shape that the groom's village is put in anticipation for the bride's arrival. The youngsters, the kids, litter the village with all kinds of branches and ants' nests and so on, because she will have to work her wedding day all day to clean the village. That's sort of a test. It's a rather a formality, of course, you know. And she will, anybody will work well the first day anyways, but the idea is to show that she's a good worker. And this is more of this litter. This is a very gay occasion, and the bride comes with a group of her brothers and sisters, or classificatory brothers and sisters, and they are entitled to help. Now, nobody from the groom's village helps, but the bride's party works very industriously the first day. Now here's a jump. This is a pregnant woman. This is not certainly a primipara. She's having her 12th child. No, I'm sorry, this one, not the 12th. That was only her third. This is in the women's seclusion area, which is covered by, surrounded by stone walls, like all seclusion areas are. And this is, I have approached this here from the women's lavatory, because I could not step where she is. I'm very restricted in taking these pictures. The baby is born. Totally, a woman is totally alone. She can receive advice from others, but nobody can touch her because she's not only polluted, she's doubly polluted. She's more polluted than menstruating women are. That little piece of hut on the right is the where she will spend now a month with the baby. And I have some pictures of that. It has been tremendous. I think it is improving. Not quite sure because the medical attention is not regular at all. And the Lao diet is good. In the bush, you still don't find families that have more than 3 surviving children out of 12 or something. You find larger families in the lagoon. lifespan, those who survive really can become very old. We think that there are some people who are over, or certainly some who are over 90. So that the tough ones, they have a special definition for a child who dies under a month, and a child that dies under, so to speak, a year, you know, before sitting up or so. But from there on, it seems, you know, those who survive really survive.
So the average age of the population is about 25?
Well, the average age, you'd have to take all this infant death into account too. We have so little, so few data about the actual ages of people that it's really almost impossible to say anything. Towards the end of our stay, we had a whole medical team from Harvard with us, 11 physical anthropologists and medical doctors, and it so happened that they all took my word. You know, we had to estimate. They had some things like, you know, at the age of six, a child is supposed to have so long arms that it can touch its other ear over the head, you know. So this is supposedly a, you know, a way of telling if a child is 6 years old. But from then on, you know, the sort of the physiological differences are quite a range, and so they ended up taking my evaluations for the age. It's really very funny because I was purely guessing, but I've always been good about ages. This is still a woman in seclusion. Now there's a very interesting thing. This is the birth hut. This is a delivery hut, or the, you know, the woman's birth seclusion hut. And you will not otherwise see women's skirts so high, but here no man will come. See, high is men's, you know, dimension, and women's things must not be high for fear that, that men would walk under. But here it is, you know, not consideration. Oh, there's just too many pictures of the same, I'm sorry. This is, incidentally, this child is called Ellie. Here, both the mother and the baby have had their hair shaven in preparation to, this baby is now 29 days old, that's for sure. That, up to that moment, the age is well known. And tomorrow, they'll move into the village. So they have got out of the seclusion hut, had a bath and the hair shaven, and will sleep the last night in the menstrual hut.
You communicate with the women and speak with them?
Yes, I learned Lao. Right. This is the bath of purification to come back to, you know, she's just got her hair shaven and now she's bathing, so she will come out to the village. This is a stone wall of the women's area, and the women's huts are there. This is a priest, a pagan priest or ritualist, praying over an amulet, you know, for the health of the baby and the mother. And here the amulet is put around the neck of the mother. This is now the entrance into the village, into the neutral area, with a newborn baby who is now 1 month old, and it is at during that day that the baby will also be named and acknowledged as a member. They said that the hair is polluted, and that the baby's hair, you know, it's just as polluted as the whole person. The baby needs a month to change blood so that the mother's blood will sort of gradually disappear, and the hair is shaven so that, you know, so to speak, the things that were in touch with the menstrual, with the birth hut will not be taken into the village. This is a married couple. The wife is delousing the husband. It could be the other way, it just is not. Married couples can do this in public, and kids can do it to each other in a row. We have, couldn't find that slide, but it's a marvelous slide of five children sitting in a row, and A is delousing B, and B is delousing C, and C is delousing D. very nice. This is women's work. These are young girls and young wives bringing the firewood to the village. And here you have a group of women together peeling taro. That's men fishing together. Here too. And bringing the nets home. This is in the men's area. And the nets stay in the men's area. But this picture here, really, sort of for the fancy that it strikes. This is an old woman, grandmother, who a few weeks before this picture was taken had lost her sight. She's blind. Yeah, she's very, very well looked after, her daughter, and in her case, her daughter, who is divorced and has a, is with her. This is women mourning for the death of a person. And this too. Last night there was a TV program about Tonga, where you couldn't see the picture for best part of it. But the wailing was not all that dissimilar to the wailing way that the Lao women wail or keen. Men are here building a ceremonial canoe. No, they are actually already here taking it apart. There's a ceremonial canoe built for the ancestors. I have skipped a great deal of things that happen in Lao life. This is, so to speak, the highlight of women's sort of social career. This is a feast that ends the big funeral cycle, and which is called the Feast for Women, Women's Feast. And you can see the women all decorated for this feast. This is the only time in a woman's life that she can have a taste of pork. You can see here the lime, the stripe, in the hair, that is lime rubbed to the hair. They are heavily dressed in dolphin teeth and all manner of decorations, shell strings. One of the products of Western world is to be seen in, that bra that the young girl is wearing. Another one is, but no, here not. You can see here a very important and traditional shell ornament, the one that is on the forehead of this woman. The things that hang down from it are dolphin teeth, but the earrings have Chinese beads, and sometimes the earrings have a little bit of wool added to them. In this case, these are sort of rather older materials, native produced shell rings and so on. But those things are also substitutable. You can see a bit of wool at the anklets or leg decorations, which are also made of Chinese beads. That may be my last slide, actually. Oh, almost last. Yeah, that's the women making a round in the village at the end of that feast.
Where are the men? Are the audience?
Men in this case are the audience, but also the officiant is a priest, is a man who sort of serves them. This is now the center of the neutral area. This is the playground or dance ground. And these are family houses in the center of the village. Yeah, that's my last slide. Question.